Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Hey guys, before we start the show, I just wanted to say thanks so much for listening. David and I are having a great time doing this podcast. It's only episode 14 that we're recording today, and already we are seeing the numbers and you guys are listening. Hundreds of listens every time we throw a podcast together. Again, we love talking about the Heat in this space. We're just asking for one thing. Please go on iTunes and subscribe. And leave us a review, a 4-star review or a 5-star review. It would be awesome. It would mean the world to us. It takes 2 seconds. We're spending an hour talking about the Heat every week, at least once a week. We really enjoy doing it, and we just want to get the word out. Again, the Heat Check, please just leave us a review. Thanks, and enjoy the episode. We had a fun one with this. David and I play a little bit of Miami Heat GM with some possible trade scenarios, so enjoy. Welcome to the Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg, editor of AllYouCanHeat.com. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How are you doing, David?
I am doing phenomenal.
Phenomenal?
Absolutely.
Why?
Oh, just a little bit of everything. You know, it's a beautiful day outside. The Heat have won, you know, they won 3 out of the last 5 games on a brutal road trip. And, you know, we've got the Hassan Whiteside savior ready to carry the franchise on his rather muscular back.
So 3 out of 5 on that road trip, something that nobody expected. I feel really great about it. I think, what did we say? Did we predict like 2-and-whatever it was?
I think we hedged our bets rather well in saying that we wouldn't be surprised if they went 0-5 or 5-0.
That's right. That sounds like us.
We covered our bases adequately.
Perfect. Okay, well, we were right then.
We went right in the middle. It was perfect.
I feel really great. We've talked about pizza on this podcast more than once, I feel like, and I found a really great pizza place for the first time in California. California has by far the worst pizza, and I hate that. Everybody talks about California pizza being good because they have like the best toppings and like fresh ingredients. Screw that. It's like the worst pizza behind Chicago pizza, and I finally found like an East Coast style pizzeria, and I'm good to go. So I found something, and it's very important to me. So I'm feeling great.
And you don't like Chicago style pizza?
No, I don't like deep dish. I'm not a pie guy. I don't like eating pie for dinner.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't have any. So I'll eat a deep dish pizza if it's good. Like, it's good food is good food, right? But I will never choose it over like a New York style slice ever. Like, not ever. Under no circumstances. Not even if I'm, like, blackout drunk.
I didn't know this about you, and I think it changes our relationship as far as the podcast moving forward continues.
Are you a Chicago deep dish guy?
Pizza is one of my favorite foods. I think it's the food. You know, everybody asks, you know, if you're on an island somewhere and you can only have one food item, what would it be? Probably pizza. And the way I see it, it's like, it's a perfect food. You get a little bit of everything, you know, and you can change up styles just enough so that
it would taste fine with sand on it.
Delicious.
Yeah, it's good.
It's like you pretend it's garlic powder.
It's all good.
So,
but you're so you like Chicago
basketball, or should we actually just talk about pizza?
Well, let me just get your final verdict. East Coast, like New York style slice, or Chicago deep dish?
I'd go with New York style.
Okay, well, that's all that matters. Okay, all right. So let's talk about some Miami Heat stuff. We saw a little bit of a curve in our enthusiasm, I guess.
Yep.
With Hassan Whiteside, Yeah, he picked up 2 early fouls. One of which was a bad foul on his part. The other of It was one offensive and one defensive. One was just a really stupid one that he shouldn't have done. And I credited that. I was like, you know what? He'll learn from that, and he just hopefully won't make that mistake too many more times. That's okay. And then he got two fouls early, and he played like not even 20 minutes in the game. But even when he was in, he wasn't necessarily impactful like we've been seeing. Also, Dwayne Wade wasn't in the game, and he's really the only guy that could run the pick and roll with him for some reason. Nobody else can figure out how to do it, even though it's the most basic play in basketball. Nobody knows how to do it on the Heat other than Dwayne Wade. So I feel like we'll be somewhere in between there and like 30 points, 15 million rebounds a game. It's on Whiteside, right?
Yeah, I get this is us perfectly hedging our bets, I guess. It's a little disappointing, but even you and I think we spoke about that last podcast, and that, you know, for all that we've seen from him and all the upside that he's definitely showing, there was some tempering of our expectations, and that we want to see how he, and I think you said it perfectly, he has to be able to produce or at least affect the game, even when he's not scoring as effectively as he did against, say, the Clippers. Mm-hmm. You know, that might have been his high game as far as the overall production, etc., but he still has to be able to produce or affect the game. And we didn't necessarily see that. I mean, foul trouble, obviously difficult to get into a rhythm. But even in the second half, then, once he finally started getting into a little bit more playing time and he wasn't in as necessarily terrible foul situation, he was able to – I mean, he did get some rebounds. He did play some quality defense. It was a good game. It was a much more – strangely enough, I feel like it was an encouraging game in that we saw perhaps the very worst of him in the first half. You know, the kind of guy who picks up really stupid, cheap, quick fouls and isn't much of a factor. And then later on, he's still able to contribute. He's at a good place right now, I think, where you've talked about it before. You know, he's very effective. He's still going to make a difference on defense. And then he changes the whole dynamic as far as the overall team offense. And I think I noticed this last time, the whole situation regarding the third quarter, as people are calling it, it hasn't been a factor since Whiteside has been starting and played more prominently. Like, I don't feel the same kind of desperation when the third quarter starts as we did maybe 2.5 weeks ago.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that people don't talk about is how bad the defense is, and specifically how bad the rebounding was. When the Heat were getting out-rebounded by 10 to 15 to even as much as 20 boards a game, that's not a fact. Even if we're not winning the rebounding battle, we're like keeping it close, and that's really all that matters, right, with this Heat team. Just don't get destroyed, don't embarrass yourselves.
Like, I feel like the Warriors game was a good indicator of that. Like, we were pretty much into it for most of the game. I mean, you're talking about perhaps one of the most explosive offenses in the league, and they just have, you know, and you would probably be much more familiar with this given your association with the Warriors, but you know, they're the kind of team that at any moment you can just kind of look away, and next thing you know, they go on a 16-0 run, and that's how they just continue to build these leads. And that's what happened against Miami. But even still, it was, you know, it wasn't until the very, even with a few minutes left in the fourth quarter, had we been able to mount any kind of a comeback. And then if, you know, Dwayne Wade had played, maybe it would have been a different situation, right? I mean, we were still in it, and I think Whiteside was a big factor about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we got some interesting games coming up, especially in regards to Whiteside and how he matches up, but we'll get to that later in the podcast. Let's talk about something fun, David. Let's talk about rumors. Let's do a little bit of gossiping here on the Heat Check.
Everybody loves that.
Everybody loves it. It gets the most page views on allyoucanheat.com, which everybody types into their search bar and visits and reads things on.
Absolutely.
That's what they do. And so Brook Lopez, I don't think we've talked about him on the podcast. I think we've talked about him privately via text or email or something.
I think we did. I did a piece on him.
You did?
Like, I want to say a month or so ago. I think we brought him up in the podcast at that
point. Oh, did we? Okay.
I think so.
Let's talk about it again. He still hasn't gotten traded. And there was this deal that he was supposed to go to the Thunder, and now it was like a three-team trade thing, and now it's not happening. But it kind of might still happen, but I guess it's still up in the air and anybody can go. And I don't think what we didn't talk about was the trade package that Miami reportedly proposed or floated out there, I guess would be a more appropriate word, was Chris Anderson, Norris Cole, and Josh McRoberts, which is about $12 million in contract, a little bit more. So That's an interesting package that could actually bring in something. But I thought what was most interesting about that was that they were willing to part with Josh McRoberts, who was touted as a long-term building piece, the only player other than Bosh and Wade not signed past 2016, right? And Chris Anderson, who's been just such an important part of this Heat team for years now, his name being included is crazy. I thought for sure that would be like trading Haslam at this point, right? He's a locker room guy. I thought it was very strange that they would trade him, or at least even be open to the idea, but it seems like they are.
I mean, it's so hard to tell exactly how much reality there is in these rumors.
That was Wojnarowski, right? So
you think it's legitimate? You think that's the offer that the Heat put out there to acquire Brook Lopez?
I'm hesitant to say that they offered it, but maybe they just floated it, you know? I think there's a difference there, like...
Kind of gauging
interest? Yeah, but what was interesting is that, you know, in the last few years during, like, the Heatles World Tour, they didn't trade Haslam for Evan Turner. That was a big deal, right? And they weren't trading these guys. The locker room was very important. Like, they had the amnesty Mike Miller, and they did trade Joel Anthony, so they were sort of open to it, but those were kind of, like, fringe guys anyway, and guys that weren't with the team that long.
We saw how that turned out, and even affected LeBron James.
Right, and even that didn't go over too well, but, they're Heat lifers, so to speak. They wouldn't deal. And I don't know if Chris Anderson is necessarily a Heat lifer, but he did re-sign after LeBron left, right? So that counts for something. And it seems like Pat Riley is using that word Heat lifer for basically anybody that signed without LeBron James being there. So to include him in a deal, and I think we've talked about it before, like the only way to include Birdman in a deal would be to trade him to a contender and write it off that way, like we're doing this for his good.
Right.
But if they traded him to the Brooklyn Nets, that's not necessarily doing that.
Notice.
So, and if you're looking at these teams that have players available, the Heat have also been linked to Aaron Aflalo, which I want to talk about. Trading him to Denver for his second go-round there, that's not that's far from a contender as well. So I don't know, I don't know if this is a state of desperation for the Heat. They're saying, okay, screw the loyalty thing to a point, I guess, because we're not very good, and at some point we just have to run this as a business like it is. And that's a little reassuring and a little concerning at the same time, because I'm not really sure if that qualifies as a panic button. What do you think?
Well, the way I see it, there's two different ways to approach the whole thing. One, you can look at the potential trade, whatever, the assets they were willing to give up. And you know, obviously from our perspective as fans, I think McRoberts, it would have been nice for him to be much more productive this season. I think you and I both are fairly high on him if he's playing at the level that he was in Charlotte last season. I think it's too soon to give up on him. Norris Cole, clearly I think that's the player who's reached his ceiling with Miami, and either he gets traded somewhere else or he signs somewhere else in the offseason and he blossoms into a much different player than he was in Miami. But as far as his role in Miami, I don't think he's ever going to get better than what he's done, which is to say that he's been adequate. And so if you're going to move Norris Cole, as much as I like the infusion of energy that he provided over the last 4 years during the title run, that's fine. But for now, I think it probably makes more sense to trade him if you can get something better for this season and for next, perhaps.
Yeah, he seems like a trade filler kind of guy anyway, like a salary filler thing right now. Because he's essentially an expiring contract with his opt-out.
Yeah.
Or with his restricted free agency, I'm sorry.
In the NBA trade market, so.
Absolutely.
And then Anderson, though, that one it's a little harder to swallow. Again, I think you're right in that, you know, maybe he's not quite a Haslam, but it did mean something. He was such a endearing character. He was part of that great title run in 2013. It's no coincidence that we went on that 27-game win streak shortly after we signed him, so I think he was a big part of that. Just the overall energy and, you know, the attitude that he provided, the way he backed up James, the way he worked perfectly on the lob and the pick and roll. I mean, that was he was a big part of that championship run, and so I think the fans would always appreciate him for that. He's not the same player, and I know even you and I have been somewhat critical of him and his declining skills, but I don't know I don't know how a trade like that makes the organization look. I mean, especially during this year of talking about the Heat lifer and loyalty and building a culture here, you know, you'd have to say that you could make an argument that Anderson's a big part of that, especially because he signed here, because of the rumors that Cleveland was another option for him to sign in the offseason, and he specifically chose Miami over Cleveland, a big contrast from what LeBron James did. So,
and if they trade him, that kid that dresses up like him at the games will look ridiculous now.
Yeah. What about all the people that got tattoos and you know, the ones that are sprouting huge wings when they go floating in the 400 level of the American Airlines Arena? What happens then?
They'll look insane. It doesn't make any sense anymore.
So I don't like the possibility of trading Anderson on a personal level.
Yeah.
Maybe it makes sense, but on a personal level, I don't like it. Having said all that, it's more about what you're getting, and I don't know that.
Right, that's what I was going to say. I mean, if you're getting Ty Lawson in return, for example,
okay.
That contract works in that trade. Trust me, I've done it plenty of times on the trade machine. It works.
Right.
You can swallow it that way, right? It's this is a stud all-star level type point guard that you're going to get. And you're giving away Chris Anderson, okay, I can understand that. But if you're getting Brook Lopez back, I don't know that that's necessarily a trade you want to do that for, especially with that deal and his injury concerns and his just overall concerns as a player. I don't know if that's the guy you pull that plug for, right? Like that just doesn't seem like a good fit.
Especially in the midst of the whole Whiteside renaissance or whatever. I mean, it seems kind of like taking a step back and saying, are you going to keep him on the bench, or are you going to keep Whiteside on the bench? Now, who are you going to have starting at the center position? Clearly, Chris Bosch is thriving at the power forward spot again, and maybe it's because he's playing alongside Whiteside and or Anderson, but it's working, and so you obviously need a big man in there.
And Whiteside's kind of given Birdman a little bit of new life here, right? Like,
right.
Just his ability to – well, Chris Anderson doesn't have to be the only rim protector on the team now. He can just kind of say – all right, there's two of us now. Let's just do this together. And where center was such an obvious big hole in the beginning of the year. I remember that Rockets game, that first time they played the Rockets.
Oh, yeah.
Dwight Howard just obliterated him. It was just a couple games or a couple days after they played Al Jefferson, and he just went off for his – it's one of his best games of the season to this day. It was just such a huge hole, and they were doing those, like, just crazy double teams no matter who the center was, and – they were just trying to fill that space as much, or cram that space as much as they could around those centers, any way they could, and they signed Whiteside. Chris Anderson got back from injury, and now all of a sudden, center's almost a position of relative strength for this team right now.
Right. Well, even if it's not as great a position of weakness, I mean,
right.
It's still a positive, and not even if it's not a huge positive, it's still not a glaring negative.
The difference between like a huge glaring negative, something that that opponents are just going to attack every time they're down the court, and just like average, is a huge difference. It's just a huge difference in wins.
So I don't think Lopez is a good fit. I just don't see it happening. He needs a lot of touches. This isn't that kind of team. Are you going to feed him the ball constantly and hope that he... I mean, and again, he doesn't work around the rim as effectively as Whiteside does, and that's where we've seen Whiteside kind of flourish, you know, where the way he executes that pick and roll with Dwayne Wade in particular. You know, you've got Bosch already on the perimeter. Brook Lopez, you know, his range is extending further and further away from the basket. So it's why a lot of critics that looked at the potential trade to the Thunder didn't think it was such a good move for them to acquire him either. He doesn't help out what they're looking for. They need somebody that's more of a low post presence. Again, even Miami, they need somebody that's much more of a low post presence. And that's what Whiteside's done. I don't see why Lopez is even targeted at this point. So I'd like to think it wasn't really even much of a consideration, other than, as we said, maybe kind of test the waters a little bit.
That's what I think. That's exactly what I think. I think you're right. It doesn't make sense. The only way it does make sense is in a backup to Chris Bosch type of role.
And that's a hell of an expensive backup,
though. Exactly. Exactly. It doesn't make any sense. You can't pay that guy to be a backup.
Right.
Not like that. I mean, that's David Lee right now is getting paid to be a backup, but he was an all-star for them for years, and right now it just doesn't work. that's fine. Like, David Lee could be the Warrior. He could be a backup for the Warriors. And the Warriors are extremely deep. The Heat aren't deep, and if you give Lopez, if you acquire Lopez on that deal, you got to start him, I feel like. And that doesn't make any sense. I think Aaron Aflalo is another name that's been floated out there. I think that makes a ton of sense, especially if you want to move Dwayne Wade to point guard.
Yeah.
If point guard is something that you can't acquire, and it doesn't seem like they'll be able to, the next best thing, I guess, is getting a shooting guard or a small forward or kind of a swingman type position.
Right.
And starting him at the two and then just moving Wade to point guard. Because that's essentially what Wade's been playing lately, is whenever he's on the court, he's basically the point guard.
Even if he's just a much more capable backup than whatever we have on the roster right now, mm-hmm. I like this trade because we've seen with Wade coming in and out of the lineup in recent games, it just changes everything. Like, the backcourt can't be dependent on who we have on the current roster, can't be dependent on for any kind of production whatsoever. Even if it's that... You know, the trio of Napier, you know, Chalmers, and Cole, you're not getting anything out of that trio. And then it forces us into a much smaller lineup there. It puts us in a disadvantage as we face bigger teams. It's good to have somebody capable, if Wade misses a game or two here throughout the course of the season, to have somebody who's a legitimate backup. You know, Tyler Johnson is not the answer. He's not going to be that person that we're counting on at the shooting guard spot. So why not have somebody who's proven, who has range? And yeah, if you want to go with, you know, a typical lineup there, and you want to have Wade at the point, you know, that's a really nice big lineup with some speed, some athleticism, good mid-range, good long-range ability. I like the move, and I'm hoping that it takes place as Denver continues their fire sale. But I just don't know exactly what we'd have to give up to acquire.
Well, I want to play GM with you in a few minutes here, but let's just keep kind of going through these targets that have been rumored. I've always liked Aaron Aflalo. I think he's a good defender. He thrived as the main scorer for the Orlando Magic. He was a borderline all-star shooting guard, and his defense didn't suffer. And that's really the big question, right? When you trade a guy from a good team like Denver was before he left, back to a bad team like Orlando was, and now he's asked to be the main scorer, can you carry that load and still be a good defender? And we even saw guys like James Harden struggle with that from OKC. He was a good defender with the Thunder. And then to Houston, he was asked to be the main scorer, and we all know how his defense suffered after that. And now he's finally starting to get back into that kind of groove and that balance. Aflalo's always kind of been good at that balance, so I think he would be really great.
You can't overlook also, we've seen this before in the past, where players get traded to teams with, you know, maybe not necessarily title aspirations, but, you know, they're going to play for something of value in the postseason, mm-hmm. and they could thrive all of a sudden. And I see Aflalo kind of floundering in Denver, and it would probably be a great boost for him personally to come to a team like Miami that can be dangerous because of their championship experience, because of their playoff experience. He would probably build on that. I don't know, has Aflalo ever been to the playoffs? I want to say no, right? Maybe with his original tour with Denver?
Yeah, with the original tour with Denver, I think he was. Those George Karl teams?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. So, I mean, yeah, he played alongside Carmelo Anthony. So, mm-hmm. I mean, either way, though, that's experience. He knows how to play alongside superstars.
And even after that, I think he played with those Ty Lawson, Danilo Gallinari, like the post-Melo trade when they got like that King's Ransom back from the Knicks, and that
right.
those guys worked for like a year, like 2 years, I think.
You're right.
Yeah. I like those Denver teams a lot. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple other guys. Jordan Farmar. That's kind of an intriguing name, right? He was pretty good with the Lakers for a few years. As a backup point guard, I liked him.
I tend to think of him as being a kind of a spot up shooter at this point in his career.
Yeah.
I don't know what his long range numbers are.
I have them right here. Good thing you asked. You didn't ask. You just said you didn't know. But I'll pretend you asked.
I was setting you up, man.
Thanks. This is why this podcast works. Also, when I don't point things out like that, it's even better. So he's a 37.4% 3-point shooter on his career. That's pretty
not bad.
And he's had, before this season at the Clippers, he's shooting 36% right now from three. He, in 13-14, he shot 44% for the 2 years, actually 44% for the 2 years previous to this Clippers season. And this Clippers team is a mess too. Their spacing doesn't make sense and everything. So, I think that's the Clippers are actually making his shooting worse. I think, but.
So yeah, definitely a lot more production from the perimeter there than what we're currently getting out of our guards.
Assist numbers are meh.
Yeah, he's not.
No, his highest total was 5 assists per game, and that was in 2010-2011. That was also his highest minutes per game season, so that could mean something. I don't know. When he was in New Jersey, actually, he spent a couple seasons in New Jersey.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, those were. Forget-
oh, he left. Yeah, he left the post Lakers championships.
Right.
And cashed in with the Nets.
Yeah, a good move career wise, I think.
Yeah, get that poker off money, man. He's a billionaire. Why not?
Yeah, for sure. Now he's selling the team. He's going to make a ton of money on it. So I think a lot of people are making a big deal out of that, right? That he's selling the team. I think that's just a business strategy. Get in early or get in and then sell quickly just to turn a quick profit, right? It's just an efficient way to do business.
I think it's just the way he went about kind of building this would-be title contender. And overspending on a number of players, it just never worked out.
Do you think if the team was like good, he wouldn't have sold it?
Hard to say, but maybe he has a little bit more emotional attachment. I mean, if he brings
Well, that's not true. He's Russian, isn't he?
So what are you saying? That they don't have an emotional attachment to it?
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying.
I'm sure that's debatable, but probably a whole other podcast right there. And if any of our Russian listeners want to come in and explain the nuances of Russian emotional attachments to basketball, we'd be happy to hear from
them. Do a guest post.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it failed so badly. He wound up putting together a team that cost a lot of money during arguably one of the most exciting eras in NBA history with the Miami Heat Big Three. Mm-hmm. So it just never worked out for him over there. And then kind of when those rumors started coming about during the offseason that he was or wasn't going to sell the team, and then he says he's not going to, and now midway through the season when clearly the Nets aren't going anywhere, it's like, wait, I'm actually selling the team. So
yeah, it's a little shady. Yeah. All right, other target, Nate Robinson. This is a little debatable. I think this is where we're getting the hottest takes in Heat Nation, I feel like. Just one word, love it or hate it? If they just hypothetically they sign Nate Robinson.
Love it with a question mark?
Okay. I love it, exclamation point. I can't stand Nate Robinson. I hate his game. I think I would never want him on my team, except for this season. I think...
And what about the rumors? What about the rumors that he's reached out to the Heat and as per, I think, Barry Jackson... the Heralds, the Heat aren't calling back. I mean, that's a bad look for this team.
Well, if they're not interested, I guess there's no reason to call them back, right?
But I mean, doesn't that look bad? Like, you're building this culture, or you've had this established culture. You know, does a call back really hurt you? I mean, can't you just? I mean, maybe like, what does that say about Pat Riley and the team when you're saying, "Hey, I want to play for you. I can make you guys into a contender. I'm going to be a boost in the backcourt." And you don't even get a call back. That's what I don't like. Whether it's true or not, again, we never know.
What if they haven't made a decision on him, right? And they just don't want to talk to him until they feel like, okay, we actually want to sign this guy or we don't want to sign this guy, but we don't know yet.
Then you call and you say, we're not sure yet. And that's it. That's all I'm saying.
I feel like that's way too simple right now for the way the NBA works. I just feel like there's got to be something. You're probably right. I don't know if this is... I don't know.
I mean, my experience inside the inner workings of an NBA front office are not particularly extensive. Hence the reason why I'm on this podcast.
But, that makes me feel great. Okay, good.
But anyway, I kind of feel like just, you know, common human decency, which is all too uncommon. You know, if this guy is, he's an established veteran, he's got a pretty good reputation around the league, players love playing with him. You know, maybe he's a bit of a head case, but he seems like he's intense. He's always provided a spark wherever he's played. I don't think it hurts the team to at least just touch base with him. Just say, look, okay. You know, we're still looking. If they've gotten a legitimate call, if Barry Jackson's reporting is accurate, and he's made a call into the Heat front office, a call back Bavusta. Having said that, I still think, and you and I agree, I guess, that he's a good addition to the team.
Yeah, and I don't think it would be... If they signed him and they started him at point guard, it would be a complete disaster. But if they signed him and brought him off the bench in the way that Mario Chalmers was coming off the bench in the beginning of the year as that combo guard, I think that would be a gold mine. I think right now that second union really... Or not even the second union. When Wade's not on the court, they struggle to create their own shots. That's just a fact. And if you have Nate Robinson in there alongside Danny Granger, whoever the backup center of the night is, whichever backup point guard you want to put in there, and like Sean Williams or whatever, like then all of a sudden there's a little bit of something going on there. Like Nate Robinson, he can at least create his own shots, right? And I think that would be valuable to this team.
Absolutely.
So, all right, so let's play a little game of GM. I'm going to propose a couple of trades to you, and you're going to tell me you're the GM of the Heat, and you're just either going to accept it or not accept it.
Finally, my skills are being utilized.
Yeah, it was a matter of time. We've already kind of touched base here, but bottom line, I'm the Nets. I call you. I want Norris Cole, Chris Anderson, and McRoberts, and we're going to give you Brook Lopez.
No.
Please?
No, thanks. He's your problem now.
Damn it. Okay. I'm the Nuggets, and I call you for Chris Anderson on his 2-year deal.
Okay.
And we want the essentially. I think I misspoke earlier when I said Norris Cole had a player opt out. He's a restricted free agent. A team can either match that or not match that, or just let him walk. Whatever. I don't see another team, regardless of what team Cole is on at the end of the season, even offering him. Maybe for like a third string point guard because it's cheap. I don't know. So essentially an expiring deal in Norris Cole. So I'll trade you Birdman and Cole for. And we'll give you Aaron Aflalo. We're high as a kite right now, and we're going to propose that to you.
Yes.
It is Denver, definitely. So who knows?
That move I make, I think it also sweetens the deal a little bit in that Anderson has experience with Denver.
So you can kind of write it off that way, like, oh, he likes there. He likes it there.
Yeah, he lives there. He's kind of a mountain man. The fans love him there. I mean, he'll be okay.
Does he live there, or did you just make that up?
I mean, I don't know that he necessarily lives there, but...
But
I mean,
he has lived there.
Yeah, he has. I mean, he's, okay. You know, he fits that kind of rugged, outdoorsy kind of mentality as far as, like, you know, that state is concerned. So I think it works out rather well. Again, there's a familiarity with the team and everything else, so it's not too far-fetched, and it doesn't come across as being a real, you know, bad move as from a PR standpoint, so... I make it. And then again, I think you're going to get so much more out of Aflalo than you would out of Lopez.
Right.
That the trade makes sense.
Quick thing on Chris Anderson. When we talked about trading him originally and having to write it off as a PR move, having to trade him to a contender, does it matter as much now that the Heat aren't so much at a contender anymore? Or has Chris Anderson basically entered what Jalen Rose likes to call the keep getting them checks state of his career? Just play wherever, make your money. Play 15 minutes a game and just do your thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say because, you know, trading him to the Nets, I mean, that doesn't look like a good move.
That's true. Well, from like a loyalty type perspective. But right. Okay, so I'm the Nuggets and I play takesy backsies and I don't want Chris Anderson anymore.
All right.
I think we'd be better with Josh McRoberts and his 4-year deal. We like how he pans out. McRoberts and Cole for Aflalo. I should point out that Aflalo is on a 2-year deal, so he works into that 2016 thing perfectly. I mean, he is really the perfect trade target for the Heat.
I like the deal.
Okay, I would do it too. I think even though they don't play the same position, having Whiteside as I think he's a good player. He's not going to be the best top 5 center in the NBA or whatever, but he's going to be, I think, like a key player for this Heat team as it's currently constructed. I like him. And I think having him and moving Bosch to power forward makes McRoberts somewhat expendable.
Yeah.
Especially that four-year deal might look really bad in year three or year four. Even though it's only for $5 million a year, he might just not ever get healthy or live up to expectations or whatever.
I mean, he might regress to the player that he was with, you know, the Pacers or Magic at some point before he thrived in Steve Clifford's system.
So. Yeah, that one season. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so we like the Aflalo trade no matter what. Okay, so Tyler Johnson's 10-day contract. His first 10-day contract is done in 3 days, on January 22nd. That'll be the end of his 10 days. The Heat have an option to either sign him again to a second 10-day contract, or they can use that now open roster spot to sign another player to a 10-day contract or sign a free agent. January 23rd rolls around. GM Ramil. And you have the option of re-signing Tyler Johnson to a second 10-day contract, or Jordan Farmar and Nate Robinson are available. And Nate Robinson has got, like, there's 15 left voicemails on your thing from Nate Robinson. And Farmar is, like, just still out there. You can either sign Jordan Farmar to be your starting point guard, Nate Robinson to be the backup shooting guard slash point guard, or re-sign your D-League prospect. Yeah, so do I. Okay. So if we were running the Heat team, basically we would have traded Nick Roberts and Cole for Alan Aflalo and added Nate Robinson.
Yes. And then sent Tyler Johnson back to the D-League.
Yeah. Speaking of the D-League, it sounds like Andre Dawkins might be signing a 10-day with the Boston Celtics.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was Mark Stein tweeted that earlier. So good for him. Yeah, I know you and I were wishing him well. We liked him with the Heat, but just didn't seem like it was working out. So they waived him, tried Tyler Johnson instead. He's been kind of good-looking, I guess, for the Heat. That was kind of nice against the Kings, right?
Yeah.
He looked pretty good. So, yeah, if he's it's not done, but he just tweeted it this morning that that's possible, and then he was getting on a flight. Like, his thing was like, I'm flying out, but... Last news tip of the day was the Celtics were looking at Andre Dawkins. I don't know where he's flying to, so he could still be in the air. Who knows?
And you had a chance to talk to Dawkins, did you not?
I did. Thanks for the plug, Dave. Yeah, and that's that. I had a really good Q&A with him, and that's up on allyoucanheat.com. And, yeah, he just a genuine kid. Didn't seem too down after about getting cut. I talked to him about getting waived by the Heat. Just seemed like he was really stoked to, after he went undrafted, really stoked to get a chance, and seemed like he learned a lot. And I don't know, I just I had the feeling, I didn't ask him outright, but I had a feeling talking to him that he kind of knew that he wouldn't, that he would at least get a 10-day somewhere else.
Right.
So when I talked to him, it was I guess 2 days before Stein tweeted this, and he was tweeting something like he was flying out to Boston after D-League to go get a 10-day contract or to interview for a 10-day contract or something like that. So. It seemed like when talking to him, just like little things that he would drop here and there, and not on purpose, but that I don't think he expected to be in a D-League that much longer.
I can't remember now, but did he use the phrase it was a business decision in regards to why the Heat waived him and why he's more accepting of it?
Yeah, I didn't want to not to reveal too much because I want the page views on the story, but. He said he expected it, and it just made sense for him. Like when he said after Josh McRoberts went down, he understood that they were going to need more flexibility with the roster. And I think he was specifically talking about when they got the disabled player exception. He kind of felt like they, knowing that they needed the open roster spot, and he was the 15th guy on the squad, that he kind of saw it coming.
Well, I don't know if I can speak for everybody else listening to the show, but based on your description, I want to read it even more now, so I think it works perfectly.
There we go. Good plug. All right, cereal or not cereal?
You got it.
Milk and cereal.
Cereal, cereal.
So, Tuesday, tomorrow, the Heat play Oklahoma City Thunder. So, hey, great. Nice million-game road trip. You guys actually did a lot better than we expected, we being the NBA and... Adam Silver, and we hate you because you're the Heat. Welcome back home. You have to play the Thunder. They're really good. Cereal or not cereal?
The Thunder are cereal.
You just had some experience covering them in the locker room, so you had a chance to talk with them. So you, I completely just, you're saying they're cereal, so they must be.
I mean, I think even from the outsider's perspective, any team with a personality like Russell Westbrook is going to come across as at least a little bit serialistic. So I think that fits the mold. And then just seeing the interaction in the locker room, yeah, absolutely. I would say that they're very loose, very relaxed, very serial. And I think they're...
Execution.
Yeah, they're executing very well.
Execution.
But that can all change, though. And that's the thing from this Thunder team is that they've been... You know, obviously the narrative is that they lost their two biggest players, two of the top, I'd say five, maybe 10 best players in the league, in Westbrook and Durant. And then all of a sudden, they come back at around the same time. They kind of peak a little bit where they're winning a number of games consecutively, and then they take a few steps back, and then they're kind of like floating there in between whether or not they can get to 500. And now where they currently stand, you know, they had a really bad blowout loss to Houston last week. They followed that up with a win over an injury-depleted Warriors team on Friday, and then a historic win against the Orlando Magic on Sunday, where they had, you know, 79 points in the first half.
That was crazy.
That was...
I got nowhere on my phone. I just... Man.
They shot 73% for the half.
So here's the money question. Does Dion Waiters make them more or less cereal?
Infinitely more cereal and also infinitely more dangerous.
Dangerous explosive cereal?
Like the diarrhea of cereal, perhaps. I don't know.
One of the Cheerios is a landmine and just try not to eat that one?
Yeah, I mean, he's amazing. Like in person, it's just his confidence is not overstated in any way. He's very confident in his abilities. He said yesterday in the locker room that he really thinks he's a two-way player, and he's probably one of the best defenders in the league, and he believes it. And I mean, again, no one other than Dion Waiters knows how honestly he feels this way about himself, but he mentions it. He says it pretty plainly. He really is a great two-way player, and he wants everybody to realize that. So he's going to do whatever is possible, even though, of course, throughout the course of his career, he's known basically as an offensive-minded player. But that's where he's really most dangerous is in the offense. You know, he's not hesitant of taking and making shots. You know, whether he makes them, rather, is a whole other story. He'll take those shots. And that's actually my biggest question mark for the Heat, is who on the second team will be able to stop Waiters when he comes in there. Hmm. You can either hope that Waiters has a bad game, which is entirely possible, or you can, you know, try and plug somebody on to stop him.
Who's the small forward on that second unit? Is that Roberson?
No, they don't really, they kind of stagger their lineup where they have, you know, they have Durant coming off the bench and then Westbrook staying with Dion Waiters, and then they kind of move Reggie Jackson in there. I mean, they could put in Jeremy Lamb for a little bit. They could put in Perry Jones for a few minutes there.
What I'm getting at is, can you put Dang on Waiters? Is there an opportunity maybe there without the Heat getting, like, blown out on that small forward spot?
It's definitely something to consider, and it's an excellent point. But then, you know, then you also have to consider, will Dang get any minutes guarding Westbrook? I mean, that's... They're a dangerous team. There's no way around it. I mean, they have two scorers capable of giving you 40 points on any night, and then they have a pretty dangerous scorer in Waiters coming off the bench. So,
yeah, this is back to my theory that the NBA hates the Heat. You're proving it right now. Everything you're saying.
I don't know if it was pre-planned or not, but it certainly does lend some credence to your theory.
Thank you. So why they hate them, hey, huge road trip. Glad you guys got through it. We didn't expect you guys to do so well. The Thunder just destroyed you because we had nobody to guard Westbrook or Dion Waiters, the trade that we totally saw coming. We hate you. We're the NBA. You have to go back on the road the day after to go play the Charlotte Hornets. The Charlotte Hornets are a serial team. We've established this already, right?
I would have said so, but I'm looking now as the season's gone on.
Less cereal.
Would you say that's, yeah, they are, right?
That's what I was kind of getting at. They're a little – we've played them before, and they were cereal. Al Jefferson is back. He is certainly cereal, and it looks like he'll be playing. So that makes them more cereal. But I think what we said was in the beginning of the year, Lance Stephenson was – like the most cereal guy on the team, and he's just gotten less cereal. Like, how do you go through all these trade rumors and stay cereal?
I mean, you as an NBA athlete, I know it's rather cliche, but there's probably some truth to it. You know, you kind of have to just shut down and stop listening to everything that you're hearing. I mean, the constant trade rumors, the criticism of his play, whether he's worth that contract. I mean, at some point, you just have to be invested in what you're doing, and on a night-to-night basis, just focus on what you're doing as best you can. And maybe Stevenson doesn't seem like the most living-in-the-moment kind of guy, but I think that's who he's had to become. And maybe that's why he's not thriving in Charlotte. And again, this is another cliche. He's not enjoying it. For whatever he was able to do in Indiana, I guess he seemed like he was still having fun. I mean, arguably working harder over there, definitely being more productive, and they were playing for something that they're not going to do in Charlotte, which is make the playoffs. And he's just not enjoying it. And so you have to look at this season, and it's been a step back for him as a professional, and perhaps maybe even a step back at a personal level as well.
So I have this theory about NBA teams.
All right.
You get every team on that 15-man roster gets one free spirited, just wild horse, basically. Just one guy that just can do whatever the hell he wants. Can stick with the play, can not stick with the play, whatever. It's why I like the fit for Nate Robinson on the Heat, because they don't have that wild horse. They don't have just random guy. And it's why I think Lance worked with the Pacers, because Roy Hibbert was firmly in his spot under the rim. Paul George was firmly on his spot in the wing. He was part of that system. Paul George was at his worst when he was just chucking mid-range shots that year he was supposed to win MVP or Defensive Player of the Year or whatever it was last year. At the beginning of the year, he was being the wild horse, and it wasn't working, and he had to get more in his lane. And now I have to think of a better name than wild horse. It's terrible. Let me know if you think of something. But Lance was that guy, and he was just able to do whatever he wants. Kemba Walker's that guy in Charlotte. Right? So I don't think that, I feel like that's not working, that pairing, especially when you have two backcourt guys. I don't think that works there.
Could you say loose cannon, or is that too wild? There's a negative connotation.
Yeah,
I see what you're saying. Like, and you know what? Arguably, or interestingly enough, that's kind of the role that Waiters fills on Oklahoma City. And that's why he's working, is because you've got some guys.
Exactly.
That are, you know, they're a little uptight. You know, they're regimented in their offense. It's either, you know, strictly ISO with Durant and Westbrook and then hope for something to happen. And then all of a sudden you have this guy who just doesn't give a what. And he's kind of like helping them mellow out a little bit, in that, you know, maybe he doesn't take himself too seriously, and that rubs off a little bit on everybody else. Or you could, you know, again, everybody else can go about their work and do it diligently, and then you still have this guy who's just keeping it loose enough so that they don't take themselves too seriously. And that's the role that Stevenson did play perfectly in Indiana. You had guys like David West, even an up-and-comer like Paul George, an old workhorse like Danny Granger, a guy like Roy Hibbert whose psyche has been questioned. And then you have Stevenson, who just doesn't give a damn. And it's perfectly blowing in ears, playing at the jackass role to perfection. I mean,
is it just the jackass, the team jackass? Every team gets one jackass. No, that's not it either. Okay.
Yeah, again, a little too negative.
Okay. Well, that's why I don't think Waiters worked in Cleveland, because Kyrie Irving is that guy. You know, he just does whatever he wants. He doesn't, especially this season we've heard, he doesn't really follow the plays. He just does, he wants to score, he score first kind of thing. A lot of these wild horses are score first guys, right? But I think there's a difference between being just a score first guy and sticking to the game plan or the play or whatever it might be and just doing whatever the hell you want to get your points. And I think that's why it didn't work there. And I have a personal problem with point guards who are the wild horse on the team. Everybody says it's a point guard league, it's a point guard driven league, but we haven't seen one of those wild horse point guards win a championship. We've seen Tony Parker, we've seen whoever the Heat point guard might be, I guess Mario Chalmers was what was considered the point guard.
So he's our wildest horse, right? He's the guy.
Well, that's when he was doing his best, right? He was playing his best when he was coming off the bench as that combo guard and just allowed to score in that second unit. That was my big thing, was let him be that for us, because we need that. And he was that, and we were playing well. But Cole was just so bad at being the starting point guard that we had no choice but to put Chalmers back into that role. And he's better as the wild horse than the regimented just... here, be the point guard, run the pick and roll for us. And I like, that's why I like Chalmers as that backup guy. So, and that's why I think the Heat have been experimenting with Wade as point guard and Chalmers as the shooting guard more as like a as a set lineup than just kind of Wade telling or yelling at Chalmers to give him the ball kind of thing. So, yeah, I like that's. I don't even remember what we were talking about anymore. Oh, yeah, we're serial or not serial. So that was my theory.
So what do we got next after Charlotte? So let's say you make it through that doubleheader there. Maybe escape with a win in Charlotte?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Probably not win against Oklahoma City, even at home where the Heat have struggled, obviously.
Yeah, with some rest, too. But, yeah, I think winning on the road is probably a better bet than winning at home at this point.
Well, I remember them pointing out some years ago, and it's I've noticed it a lot more, that the game back from a road trip is always harder than even the last game on a road trip. Hmm. Like people would assume you're exhausted, you've been away from home for a few weeks or whatever, but there's kind of like a comfort in the established pattern of being away, so that when you come back and all of a sudden, you know, you're dealing with day-to-day life, you're back in it, you're obviously physically drained at this point.
But there's like a grogginess.
Yeah, like you're you know, you've got to pay bills, you know, your wife is arguing to, you know, why you haven't taken out the dog or thrown out the trash or whatever, and you have to pick up the kids at school, all the things that you kind of ignored when you could just say, but baby, I've been on the road for 2 weeks. Now all of a sudden you can't do that anymore. You're back in it, you're back adjusting to the life. It's kind of like, you know, whenever you go on vacation and you always need a vacation from your vacation because you need some time to settle back in and adjust.
Right.
This is on a much bigger scale, and this is how it affects NBA players. So, again, maybe that they've had a long layoff helps the Heat. Maybe you'll get, like, a version of them that's, like, running on all cylinders and playing to perfection, especially if Dwayne Wade comes back and he's healthy and fits in seamlessly.
He did participate in shoot-around this morning. Should note that.
That's a good sign. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, again, you know, it's a tough challenge. Either way, the Thunder are going to present a hell of a challenge. Adjusting to life after being on the road for a couple of weeks makes it even more difficult, but we'll see what happens.
So after Charlotte, it's the Indiana Pacers, not serial.
Not serial anymore.
Totally established as not serial. That game is on Friday.
Correct.
That's 5 days that they could work out a Lance Stephenson deal.
For the Pacers to acquire Lance Stephenson.
Would this be crazy if the Heat played Lance Stephenson on Wednesday and then played him again on Friday?
I don't think it would work.
No, I guess not. The
limited amount of time, the physical and all that. I mean,
it'd be kind of cool, though.
Yeah, it'd be hilarious. And I'm sure it's happened.
I want to look back. I have no idea how to look that up.
I'm sure it's happened. Like, you play a player consecutively on two different games with two different teams. I'm sure it's happened. And it's probably happened a lot more in NBA history when guys were traded to, like, one of eight teams.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
And it's like you're fighting. You couldn't take a game off to say, well, I'm rehabbing, because you know what? That was a big part of your paycheck when you were having your summer job selling cars or insurance or what have you. So you couldn't afford to take a day off. So if you were traded from, say, the Fort Wayne Pistons to the Syracuse Nationals, you couldn't just say, well, I'm going to take this day off and recover from the trade. It's like, no, you better get your butt out there and play so that you can get your $25 a game or whatever it was you were making.
I think, so Indiana's our first big chance to actually win a game, right? That Thunder game and that back-to-back against the Hornets, that's pretty tough. I think you're right. The 1-1 would be nice.
But, you know, the Pacers, while arguably not as dangerous, they've already beaten us.
Yeah, and they're coming on now. It seems like they're starting to kind of figure things out. But that's a good – between Wednesday and Friday, that's a good rest. They get them at home. I don't know. Nothing's a guaranteed win, right? But that's probably the best chance we have this week.
And the Whiteside-Hibbert matchup is the most intriguing I've seen.
That is really intriguing. Yeah. I think because Hibbert is really great at protecting the rim, but I don't know how good he's going to be coming out defending – on that pick and roll. He's not bad at it, but I don't think he's necessarily great at it. Unlike Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, who are playing Sunday afternoon in Chicago. Serial or not serial?
That is the question, though, right? I mean, I can't quite put a finger on Chicago. I'd have to say not serial, even with Pau Gasol there.
Hmm.
But it's a tough one.
It is really – that can go either way. And I don't know if Derrick Rose even makes a difference. The best player on that team right now is Jimmy Butler, right?
By far, right?
And I'm in the camp that they should try to trade Derrick Rose if they can. That's just my opinion. But that's a whole other podcast.
Holy crap. I didn't even think that was an option. I don't think anybody's ever even mentioned it, right?
Nope. Except me. That's what I do.
You're breaking news.
I'm a trailblazer.
You are on the pulse, man. That's interesting.
That's me. I cover one D-League showcase, and I know everything. So the Chicago Bulls, I think, should trade Derrick Rose. There's been no rumors of this whatsoever, but I think they should trade him to the Lakers. I think the Lakers are desperate enough and would give up enough, and the Bulls could do it. Because here's my concern with the Bulls is that Jimmy Butler, they need to re-sign him. He's pulling the whole Joe Flacco move. He's banking on a huge season, and he wants to get a max deal. And that's exactly what he's doing right now. He's playing his cards perfectly. He's having the best season of his career by far. People have mentioned him as an MVP candidate, like a top five kind of guy. He's amazing. He's just playing out of his mind right now. And I don't know. I just, like, they're going to have to re-sign him, and unless they want to go far into that luxury tax or whatever, it might be worth it to just trade Derrick Rose and get rid of that headache of, okay, is he our starting point guard or is he not? Is he going to be playing today or is he not going to be playing? Everybody keeps saying the Bulls can't win the championship unless Rose is healthy. I think that's true as long as Rose is on the team. If you trade Rose and you're freeing up that salary to accumulate some other players, like another starting point guard, just some more depth all around, can you imagine how good that team would be?
Yeah.
I think they should absolutely trade him. I think the only team that would be willing to take him is the Lakers.
I would say that Rose probably, you know, being the Midwestern guy that he is, I don't think he would thrive anywhere like L.A. Like, I think in a team for so desperate for superstars, somebody to take over for Kobe as the face of the franchise, et cetera, that is going to put such a huge spotlight on a guy that is, admittedly, a very, very, very poor communicator. That would be a massive disaster. I think Rose in L.A. would be a terrible, terrible move.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you, but I think the Lakers are desperate enough to give it a shot.
Oh, I'm sorry. Whether they'll do it or not, that seems perfectly in line with what the Lakers are.
Exactly. It's irrelevant whether or not he'll be good.
How about this? I mean, well, maybe not. Now that we're starting to see signs of Phil Jackson kind of knowing what he's doing as far as clearing out the team.
The Knicks?
What about the Knicks?
Does Derrick Rose fit?
With the Knicks?
Like, what would they have to trade?
The triangle? Yeah, I think so.
You think he can run the triangle? Okay. And I agree with you, but what would they have? The Knicks would have to give up. Like, would the Bulls be willing to take back on, like, if they just did this trade today, right? They would have to take back Amari Stoudemire, and that would probably do it, right? Wouldn't that work? Let me try the trade machine while we got you on here. That would probably do it right there. But the Knicks don't have the picks, right? The Knicks don't have the picks. The Bulls would have to be getting like draft picks or significant assets in return. The Knicks don't have any of those. Yeah, they can't do that. But that would be interesting. Carmelo Anthony could have signed with the Bulls and played with Rose, but instead he got Rose to go to New York. Who knows? But the Lakers, I think, have the assets, right? You can always get a third team involved, trade Julius Randle over. Get Julius Randle to go to that third team because the Bulls don't need him.
And Jeremy Lin starting in Chicago, right?
Jeremy Lin would work really well as just as a replacement point guard.
And, you know, the way the Bulls have always maximized their backup point guards, maybe all of a sudden he'll turn back into what was there for a brief window in New York. So maybe he'll, you know, maybe it'll be Linsanity part two.
I've talked to a couple of people in private about this Derrick Rose trade, and nobody hates it. Everybody's very intrigued by it and think that the Bulls would be better with that addition by subtraction kind of thing.
Wow.
And it's not that Rose isn't good or even the best point guard in the NBA when he's completely healthy, but it's just that headache of not knowing. And if you're a team that wants to win a championship and has a window like the Bulls do, you either have to go all in on Rose and make sure he's playing every game and stop letting him sit out whenever he feels like it, or trade him. And that's how I personally feel. And I think that you just can't be in limbo right now. There's a window right now, and with Pau Gasol now playing the way he is, with Noah, with Jimmy Butler, there's a window, and with the depth that this team has, and just you got to be on. You either have to. He's got to be 100% playing, or just not on your team.
It's an interesting perspective. I don't know exactly how it would all shape up, but I do know this: the Heat will lose to Chicago.
Well, Joakim Noah is a really tough matchup, and he's going to be similar to what Boogie Cousins was, right, for Whiteside.
Even coming back from injury, yeah. and on minutes restriction, right, he's still dangerous.
Yeah, well, just when if he's in there against Whiteside specifically, he just has a way, like Boogie, of defending the pick and roll and just basically just stopping Whiteside from getting where he wants to go. They're both very good at that, and I think that's what Whiteside's going to struggle with. So this might be a game where Whiteside's going to need to do more on the defensive end and rebounding-wise just to keep the Heat in the game on the boards, and then maybe let Bosch just... This is a good game for Bosch to just go crazy for, like, another 30-something point game. Get Pau Gasol and Taj to get out from away from the rim and do his thing.
A four-game week, Miami goes 2-2 or 1-3?
Well, let's see. They over... What's the word I'm looking for? They did better than we thought with this road trip.
Exceeded expectations.
Exceeded expectations, so I think there's going to be a regression to the mean here. I think they're just going to go back to, like, 1-3.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
that's tough to watch, yeah. And that kind of kills all the momentum because you're kind of, like, again, and this is the way the team has been all season, right, is that they've been up and down, up and down.
All right, I'll go 2-2. I changed my mind. I think we sandwich this one. I think we... Two losses is the bread, a couple wins is the meat. Hornets and Pacers, we beat them. Lose to the Thunder and Bulls.
Wow, that makes sense. I mean, those are the two easiest wins. But again, knowing the Heat, though,
they
get blown out against Charlotte. They lose to the Thunder in a close one. They get blown out at Charlotte because it's a back-to-back set. Then they whoop up on the Pacers, and then somehow mysteriously they catch Chicago in a really bad night. Chris Bosh shuts down Pau Gasol, and we win at Chicago.
That's possible.
Isn't it? I mean,
anything's possible with this team.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Dual day back in Chicago.
Ooh, revenge game. I like that. I forgot about the revenge game.
Shuts down Jimmy Butler completely.
Yeah. Jimmy Butler sucks. I forgot about the dang revenge game factor. That's definitely a thing with Dang. Yeah. That's absolutely a thing. He prides himself on his work, so.
I'll say 2-2. But it would be more like an open-faced sandwich.
I like that. Good.
The last two games being on top. So that's how we end the four games in a week.
It's 2-2. Two it's completely open. We have no idea how it's going to work. All right. All right. Well, thanks for joining me, David.
Absolutely. Looking forward to talking next week.
That's it. All right. That's it for the Heat Check. You can find my writing. You can find David's writing at allyoucanheat.com. Go to iTunes and subscribe to the podcast. Find us and follow us on SoundCloud just by searching Heat Check. Thanks for listening.